All right, welcome into the fan pregame here on Sportsnet for the next hour. We're not up on Sportsnet 590 Fan. That is the Blue Jays game. Very fun. We're already getting booted off for Blue Jays. I'm happy about it.
It is the season to be booted off for Blue Jays baseball. Sometimes that leads to like a day off. Not today, though.
No. Spring
TV
training.
Only.
It's
Sportsnet 360. Very exciting.
Yeah, so we'll be up here on the network for the next hour. Blue Jays, if you're looking to listen to Blue Jays, got to go to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. They are playing the Baltimore Orioles in about 5 minutes will be first pitch. Tonight, we've got a couple big Canadian games to focus in on in the NHL. So we'll have a bit of NHL heavy show. Derek Lalonde will join us in a moment and Sean Reynolds around 6:30. We've got Utah and Edmonton on Sportsnet 1 at 9 p.m. Detroit and Washington, 7 p.m. on 360, and Milwaukee Golden State, 10 p.m. on 360 as well. But the regional games are where the money is, where I'm looking for tonight. Okay.
Why is that?
Well, Calgary and New York, that's a big one. We just saw Calgary last night in Toronto, so Sportsnet West at 7 p.m. But Winnipeg and Vancouver, which we'll talk to Sean Reynolds about, 10 p.m. on Sportsnet Pacific. That's a first-round current matchup that we would see. Mm-hmm. So lots to go through.
Yeah, big games. Big games in the NHL tonight for Canadian teams. And it's starting to crystallize the potential for six, maybe seven Canadian teams to make the playoffs with the resurgence of the Ottawa Senators and now the surging Montreal Canadiens, who happen to play each other tonight. Another big game in the NHL, and more specifically for Canadian teams. We'll break down the prospects of, you know, how many Canadian teams do in fact get in, but it's interesting. There's like, I wouldn't say a bunch of Canadian teams are playing like great hockey right now, aside from the Winnipeg Jets, but they're all in the mix, and they have it all to play for here in the final month of the regular season. See how many can get in and see how many teams like the Canadians can overshoot and exceed expectations and turn in a good season no matter what happens in the playoffs.
All right. We'll go through some of those playoff predictions or look ahead at how many of those Canadian teams, as you said, six or seven possibly could get in. But let's start our conversation tonight with Derek Lalonde, former NHL coach and Sportsnet analyst. Derek, we appreciate you coming on. We didn't get a chance to chat with you on free agency. They kept you away from us at the trade deadline.
Too busy in the main set.
We're glad to have you now. Did you enjoy your stay? And did everybody treat you well?
It was awesome. First class, Biz and Bieksa took up a lot of the airtime. So I felt like I cheated a little bit, but it was awesome. Always good experience. Those guys are professionals. Love doing it. Makes me better. This too. I went shirt, tie, jacket. Bieksa told me to. I don't know if this is like a 19th green type thing.
You might be our first. Better,
impeccable though.
You might be the first guest that we've had.
Better safe than sorry. I'll tone it down next time.
Well, you might be pandering to Eilish because you got the Bills helmet in the background. You got a couple nice jerseys back there. What's the one over your right shoulder?
Yeah, that's my Red Wing jersey. Then obviously these my last three head coaching jerseys. You know, the day you become the head coach, you get the presser and you hold up the old jersey and they give you the handshake. So that's that. And then the Bills, that came from the Buffalo Bills. It's the one, two passionate teams growing up in upstate New York, the Montreal Expos, that is not going very well for me right now. And the Buffalo Bills. So mixed emotions. Whenever I go to Buffalo, they pound me with Bills questions or knows I'm a fan. And the Bills sent me that helmet. So it was pretty cool. So it made it in the backdrop there.
Okay, let's pound you with some questions regarding Canadian hockey teams. I want to start with the Edmonton Oilers, who are facing Utah tonight. Utah is a surging team, or at least in the hunt, in the wild card in the Western Conference. Oilers have, though, been in this like comfortable position, it seems, the entire year. And I think you definitely can relate to a certain extent of where Edmonton is now, because all those years in Tampa where the expectation is, hey, we're going to have success in the playoffs. We are waiting for the postseason. That's when our season will be measured. How difficult is that? Just like kind of waiting, getting through the 82 games, making sure that you're sharp, not trying to, just trying to safely get through the season so that you can actually get back to the point where your success is going to be measured. How difficult is it to navigate 82 games when those 82 games don't tell your season story?
Yeah, it's a good question. Tough balance for sure. I'm not worried personally about Edmonton. I understand the fan base. You hit a little slide. I get it. With that said, you get Ekholm back 100%. And then I just took a quick peek at some of the B core players, if you will, Perry, Brown, Henrique, Nugent Hopkins, Janmark, Arvidsson, even Nurse, they're all just approaching the wrong side of 30, which you two don't have to worry about for a while here, but that's real.
Don't be so
And
sure.
I think you just go through some moments. Your urgency goes down a little bit. Then you get the two cheat code players. So I think they're going to be fine, but it is a balance for the coaches. The coaches do stress on this. You just don't show up for the playoffs and turn it on, even though that's a kind of team that could possibly do that. So the coaches are going to be hammering it, hammering process. So I really like their game. I had a first opportunity to watch a full 60-minute game the other night of Edmonton with the Rangers. Good. I'm very invested into Jake Walman. I like to obviously enjoyed having him in Detroit. Wanted to see how he panned out there. And I like their game. They played a team game. They played a good defensive game. So I think they're going to be a good spark, but that's real for the coaches. It's a balancing act. It's part of managing, but it's a reality. But that team is going to be in a really good spot when the time comes.
True or false? Elite teams can flip a switch. They can go from one thing to something completely head and shoulders above that.
That's false. I will say this, and then I know we might even talk about some of these bubble wild card teams. The one thing about elite teams, they can play just okay and win hockey games. These middle of the range teams are fighting for those last wild card spots. If they don't play well, they're probably not going to win. And it is a balancing act. I know it sounds very cliche, but you talk about process all the time. I go back to the 62 win season we had in Tampa. And we got smoked by Columbus in the first round. When you look back at it, you kind of self-reflect. I wouldn't say it was predictable, but we lied about our process. We won a lot of hockey games that year because of Andrei Vasilevskiy. He'd be the best player every single night. And then Cooch would make a play. Stammer would score a goal. Point would score a goal. And all of a sudden, we're on these 5 out of 6 winning streaks, 8 out of 10, and you feel good. But it's not true in the process. So you can't turn it on and off. There's too much parity in the league. So teams will start getting their game in order. Everyone talks about it going up a notch this time of year. It's because teams are getting their game in order. So I would say false on that.
It makes me think about Winnipeg when you're talking about this team because their switch has already been flipped on all season long. They're the best team in the league. They've been at top of the standings. They got the best goaltender in the league. But for some reason, it's like their switch flips off when the playoffs come. I wonder for you when you watch this team, like what does it take to continue to have that regular season success in the postseason? Is it a mentality? Is it, a little bit of the nervousness of we've been here and we haven't broken through? Like what is holding Winnipeg back?
There's probably a little mental hurdle. This is a different Winnipeg team. You got to trust me on this. I love their team. I had the unfortunate front row view of getting whooped by them earlier this year. But it was a whooping because of their depth. I absolutely love their third line. It's the best third line in hockey. I love their fourth line. I love the depth of their D. I love the Luke Shen addition. I see Sandberg kind of having a pickup in his game. I'm not surprised. Luke Shen is a simple, predictable hockey player, easy to play off. I love their depth. I wouldn't say they're a perfect team, but if you're building a team, you want a first line that can score, a second line that can score and keep an eye on your net, and literally two checking lines that are heavy, depth throughout the lineup, and then obviously a world-class goalie. I think they're in a really good spot, but sometimes you just run into certain opponents, and the West, the top of that West is really tough. So I don't blame Winnipeg. It is a little bit of a mental hurdle. We had to go through it in Tampa. When we beat Columbus in the bubble, that was real. You talk about mental hurdles and getting over a hump. That was real. And we proceeded to win 10 straight series after that. So I think there's a little bit mental to it, but I really like this Winnipeg team a lot. That's a team coaches dream of.
Winnipeg will play the Vancouver Canucks on Sportsnet Pacific tonight, which could be a first-round preview. From a coaching standpoint, Vancouver is unbelievably fascinating team. But I think
Lots of
the most
drama.
interesting thing about it is Quinn Hughes, because clearly he's going through something, and clearly he's the everything for your franchise, and clearly you need him on the ice and used at a very high level, a very high usage level, in order to get the best out of your team, because you can just look at the on-offs when they're on the ice, when Quinn Hughes is on the ice, excuse me, Good things happen when he's off, bad things happen. So what's the delicate balance there for a head coach at Rick Tocchet, or you can put yourselves in Rick Tocchet's shoes, where you know you got to play this guy, you know you got to get the best out of him, you know he is unbelievably important to your success, but you've got this unbelievably important asset that's going through something pretty damaging, potentially, from a injury standpoint. How does a coach deal with that situation?
Yeah, I think in this day and time, where science is at, a player's never going to put himself at risk, and a coach certainly isn't. So if he's okay to play, if he's clear and he's out there on the ice, he's good to go. And I don't think it's a real worry for the coach. As far as Hughes, I use the word cheat code, mentioning the Edmonton guys. I think there's probably a handful of players, maybe on one hand, 8 to 10 players that I call cheat codes. And it's just those type of players that can just take games over by themselves. And Hughes is one of those guys, and he's going to keep them in the fight. It's why they're in the fight right now, but they're one of those bubble teams that they have warts as a team. It's a reality of it. A lot of those teams are. We were that in my 2.5 years in Detroit. So you need players like that. You need difference makers. And I think Vancouver, along with some of these other bubble teams, you just got to find a way not to hit slides. And if you can do that, if you go on one of these heaters like Montreal is right now, you're going to give yourself a chance. So I think Coach Tog has done a really good job with really tough expectations this year. If that D-man comes back, I like them as possibly sliding in that last playoff spot.
Justin mentioned like the importance of Quinn Hughes, like who obviously is like the captain of that team. But I wonder when things are a bit dramatic in the outside of the locker room, when the media has a lot of opinions on your team and has a lot of opinions on things that you don't know, what's the coach's role in that? Like, how do you quiet the media, keep the waters calm, but also try to address some of the difficulties that's happening behind closed doors? Like, it's a bit of a weird thing because we only see one side of it, but now you kind of see both. What do we maybe not know about how difficult it would have been to be just keeping things afloat in Vancouver?
Managing in the NHL is real. And the coaches that are having success, the coaches that make it to the National Hockey League, you know, part of their skill set is managing. I don't think Rick Tocchet gets enough credit for the type of communicator he is. Even personally, knowing a little bit, but when we play him, I'm walking through the hallway. I know a couple of their ex-players. I'm going out for morning skate, and he's communicating with players and communicating with players in the right way. It's real. It's part of it. You talk as a coach, you got to get rid of the noise, and it's very real. I experienced it in the Detroit market. The beauty about a market like Tampa, you don't get a lot of noise. We got smoked by Columbus in the first round. There's maybe two articles, one media day, and they moved on to the Buccaneers, which I think there's some value in that in itself. You don't get that in Vancouver. But what Rick does get is he gets his own locker room. There is time when those doors are closed. It's his time to communicate with the group. It's his time to engage them, get rid of the noise. And I think he does a pretty good job with it and why he's had some success there.
We're talking to Derek Lalonde, former NHL head coach and Sportsnet analyst. Is that the worst part of the job? Like, you didn't get into hockey and hockey coaching to, you know, play messenger with the media, right? You got into it to coach hockey teams, to win, to have success, to do what happens inside the room and out and on the ice. Like, is that the worst part of the job? Is that something that is overlooked when thinking about entering that sort of career? Like, how did that ecosystem treat you? And I guess there's two ways to look at it. You looking at it and it looking back at you, but how did you deal with all that?
Yeah, to me, I don't think it's the worst thing on it. And, you know, there's many things that you could argue, like at the younger athlete today, you know, communicating, getting to that younger athlete, the media, the noise. To me, it's a simple reality, and you got to have tough skin on it. It's the way it is. And the guys that don't work through it are going to be in trouble. Trust me, coaches don't look at social media. Things don't bother them. 99.9% of the time, the average fan in a restaurant on the street is engaging. They're unbelievable. Today's day and age, the one percenters get a huge voice with social media, but they're fans. That's the reality of it. And you have to have tough skin with it. And I look at some of these guys that are these repeat coaches of 5, 6, 7 years. It's you know, I got fired for my first time some of my peers with experience, I wouldn't go as far as they were laughing at me, but they're like, it's nothing. You have to trust me. You don't listen to the noise. It's the reality of it. And sometimes you become a coach that internally you feel it just failed. And then within 6-7 months, it's unbelievable. All of a sudden media makes you the coach with experience. So as a coach, you better have earplugs in, you better have thick skin, and you concentrate on what's important. And that's your guys. That's the guys in the room and the guys around you.
Yeah, thick skin, and don't get bullied into wearing a suit on our show. But that's all right. You laugh it off and you move on. Let's ask you about some of these bubble teams. Most like tonight, there's a big game between Montreal and Ottawa. And I was curious about the idea of, let's say you're on the bubble. You're Montreal. You're a player that knows how many games out you are, how many points you need. But you also got to focus on your own. Keep your eyes on your own page. Like, how difficult is it when you're in the midst of being able to be a playoff team, or you know you're right on the cusp, but trying to focus on just like every night just playing your best hockey?
It's a challenge, especially when it's your first time through it. Mm. And I mean that in that I'm not surprised in Montreal. I like the group. I talk about Winnipeg's depth. There's a reason Montreal wins at home. Marty loves his third and fourth line. He trusts those lines. They check. They become really tough matchups. There's a given night that Dvorak might be his matchup line at home, and he trusts it. There's a given night that it's Evans. And it's such a luxury. And I'm not surprised watching that team throughout where they're at, and they have a legit chance. Now, getting over that mental hurdle, it is new. We had a little bit of that 2 years ago in Detroit, but not quite obviously where we were last year. And it was a challenge. This was new for our guys. And for a team like Montreal, for some of these teams, Calgary's on a 3-game losing streak, first time on that bubble in a couple of years. You just got to avoid these slides. And it's easier said than done. I still lose sleep over last year. In Detroit, we had a 16-5-2 January and February. We put ourselves a phenomenal spot. We were well up in the first wild card. And we hit a 7-game losing streak. Dylan Larkin went down with injury, but that's teams get injury all the time. You got to fight through that. We did not do that last year. We finished with 91 points in a virtual tie with Spencer Carberry and Washington. Spencer is going to win the President's Trophy, and he's going to be coach of the year this year. And I'm talking to you guys. And we were literally in the same spot last year. So it's a reality at times. You have to avoid these slides, and it can be done many ways. And right now, a team like Montreal is on an uptick. You got to ride that, man, because they're tough to come by. You look at some of the teams that are competing with Columbus on a 4-game losing streak. Detroit lost 6 in a row. They've lost 7 of their last 9. They'll have 3 wins in their last 14. That's a slide that puts you in a really bad spot. Boston has been fighting it a little bit. These teams aren't perfect. But it's just the reality of avoiding that slide. There's many ways to do it. It ultimately has to come from the room, but that's the advice for some of those teams in that bubble right now.
Spencer Carberry is in charge of the Washington Capitals, as you mentioned, who have a couple things going on right now. Chase for a President's Trophy, a long playoff run, and, of course, a goals record. You were behind the bench many a times watching Alexander Ovechkin. Do you have a favorite on-the-bench Ovechkin memory?
Yes. A couple of things with Ovi. One, his ability to score from distance. My first year in the league, I ran the penalty kill in Tampa Bay. And Ovi was still probably just on the outside of his prime, but as an animal, you know, set up the penalty kill. And in today's analytics, you're trying to avoid the scoring area, the grade A area. Analytics guys, people talk about it all the time. You keep them out of that grade A area, and you're doing a good job. Well, running the penalty kill, we have a set plan to push Ovi outside of the scoring area, and he buried one from well outside the scoring area from distance. And like any good young coach, I went immediately and blamed everyone else. the system, the goalie, the coach, everything like that. And Jeff Halperin, who had played with him, basically between periods, I've been telling you all week, he's a different animal. He can score from distance. You throw out those things, push him out further. And it's just, that's a special talent, his ability to score from distance. He's one of those guys, you're kind of coming into the league, you know, spent 7 years recently in the league, that they kind of pop when you're watching them. and you're like, wow, he's like, even right now, he comes off an injury.
Broke his leg is crazy.
There's nights he just doesn't have his legs. And I'm sitting there in one game we played him last year. I know he doesn't have his legs. He might have come off injury. I'm like, well, we might catch Ovi on a off night. Puck bounces, ends up in the slot on his stick, back of the net. I don't think people give enough credit of his hockey IQ, his ability to find spots. I think we're very lucky to be watching what's going on right now and be part of this era right now.
I love that power play story because the ultimate dumb guy take, and it's been the ultimate dumb guy take for 20 years now, watching Ovechkin is you're at a bar, you're on a couch, you're talking to your buddies. Why don't they just put someone on Ovechkin? He scores from the exact same spot every single time. How can a coach not pick up on that? But I that's what it is, right? The home plate or whatever you want to call it is the most important area. But he extends the home plate because he can score from distance.
I had him covered well out of scoring area.
There you go.
But Jeff Halpern nicely put it, not good enough for Ovi. So I think that's pretty special.
Different analytics for facing out.
Different analytics for Ovi, for sure.
Well, you were a part of helping him make history. So that's something.
Yeah.
You know, it's a good spin.
Thank yourself for, you know, if you hadn't covered him, you had him covered, he might not have been this close to Gretzky. So
that will be the one goal.
There you go. Yeah, that'll be it. Yes. Well, this was so much fun, Derek. We appreciate you coming on. Awesome to have you all dressed up for this occasion, and we'd love to have you back.
Next time, I'm going to go down one tie down and go from there.
I love that. Well, enjoy the games tonight, and we'll chat soon. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
That's Derek Lalonde, former NHL coach and sports and analyst. Just dapper gentleman tonight.
Mm-hmm. Very dapper.
That's so good. So I guess Kevin told
I don't know if Kevin jammed him up or he has
Kevin
no
did
idea.
It on purpose.
Probably.
I hope he did. We'll have to get to the bottom of it. But it looked great. And we were matching, wearing pink. So spring is in the air.
There you go.
Quickly, because we talked about the Canadian press for these teams. Right now, Jets, Canucks, Leafs, Sens are all in playoff positions. We talked about it. Jets and Canucks are playing tonight, and that's on Sportsnet Pacific. That would be their first round matchup. So, you know, one Canadian team wouldn't advance past that. If the Leafs started tonight, they'd play Tampa. And if the Sens started in the playoffs tonight, they would play Washington. And right on the cusp is Montreal. So, like, they are in the could happen category for me. They just need to pass New York, the Rangers, for wild card spot number two. They got 1 point back with two games in hand, totally in possibility. But they got to watch out for Detroit and Columbus, who are right behind them, who haven't been as hot, but they got 70 points. But the hard uphill climb are the Flames, and they needed those points last night from the Leafs. But they got to pass Vancouver and or the Wild for a wild card spot, and it's a bit tight there.
Yeah, the dream of seven definitely requires the Wild to take a step back.
And because, the Flames to take a few forward.
Yeah, it would have to be a pretty drastic shift, and they've been playing without Kaprizov, so like any like stark difference in roster personnel ain't going to help the Flames at this point. So the dream is probably not going to happen with seven.
Six seems like a
distinct possibility, and that would be unbelievable.
Last time that happened was 1986. So that was when seven Canadian teams made the playoffs. That was the 21-team NHL, which had the Nordiques and the Jets and the Sens and
good mix too. Like you have a couple teams that are facing each other potentially. Mm-hmm. You have a couple teams that have massive expectations. You have a couple free rolls at the table for a team like Montreal getting in. It would provide us with plenty of storylines ahead of the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. The Flames just kick it into high gear because you got to pass Wilder, Canucks, but behind you are the Blues, the Flames, and Utah. So it's a bit tight, but I would be happy with 6-7.
Notice how Lalonde, when he was gushing about a team, he was always talking about their third and fourth lines.
Yeah, he really loves the third and fourth line.
It might just be like...
I think I would have been his favorite player then.
That's definitely true. But it might just be like coach speak, or it could be the thing that we all overlook. Like you take the Leafs, for example, we're just talking about their top two lines
and how
they've completely alienated the bottom six, and that might be the reason why they have no postseason success. I don't know, just something to think about.
Okay. Well, we will scour all of the teams and find out who has the best third and fourth line, make it happen.
Add it to the Stanley Cup handicapping.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back on Sportsnet to talk to Sean Reynolds about that Jets team that is top of the NHL.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on Sportsnet for the next 30 minutes. Hey, listen, Justin, if you're looking for the Blue Jays, radio has it. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, it's Blue Jays Orioles. I saw some confusion on Twitter. That's where you can listen to it, folks. So head on over there. We've got Utah and Edmonton tonight, 9 p.m. start on Sportsnet 1. Detroit and Washington with a Sportsnet 360 start at 7. Milwaukee and Golden State at 10. And regionally, got a lot of Canadian teams in action, including Winnipeg and Vancouver. That's on Sportsnet Pacific at 10 p.m. That would be a first-round matchup. We'll talk to Sean Reynolds about that in about 5 minutes. And Calgary and New York. Calgary really needs to win this. That's on Sportsnet West at 7.
Yeah, big game for Calgary. Biggest game for Montreal facing the Ottawa Senators tonight. Biggest game between those two teams in a while.
Yeah, I heard the fan Montreal on the show saying like 10 years. Between the biggest, I was like, that's probably right. The last time these two teams had this big of a game.
Yeah, it's a big game. It feels like it could be bigger in that Ottawa could, its situation might be more tenuous than it is. Like they seem pretty firmly in playoff position.
Yeah, they're on a 6-game winning streak, right?
So I feel like it's just biggest for Montreal given where they're at. But that's definitely going to be a game worth checking out tonight. This isn't firm, but there was some whispers on Twitter on the Bird today that, the Mammoth might be the name for Utah based on some patenting
yeah,
moves.
I first have a question about patenting. Any patent experts listening? Why is it public? Because that's what happened to the PWHL when they got.
Public so that people don't like, hey, can I patent this?
No, I know, but you shouldn't be able to just be like, what got patented today? Because that's what happened with all the PWHL names when they first got leaked, and they were not great names. So maybe it helped with a little bit of a public outroar. But all of a sudden, people could just tell that.
It's hard to keep secrets nowadays.
Six team names were patented. So, like, I'd like to be surprised once in my life about a team name.
I don't think it's going to happen.
And if it's going to be the Mammoth, just because we found out through patenting companies, just.
It's a hard word to say.
Patent companies. It should be, let us have one thing. Don't ruin it for me.
Well, if it is the Mammoth, I think it's the best of the bunch.
It was Mammoth,
I know you're
Outlaw,
an Outlaws fan.
And Utah Hockey Club.
Hockey Club could have been like, hey, they're the Hockey Club, but they're also unofficially the Yetis. I thought that was potentially a cool idea. The Mammoth, speaking of patenting, there's the Colorado Mammoth in the NLL.
Yeah,
so I don't know how
did they?
I don't know how that's not an issue.
The patent company wasn't working.
I guess they didn't do the patenting in Colorado. I'm not really sure. Anyway, it's messy, but we're going to get to a point eventually where it's not Utah HC versus the Edmonton Oilers. It's the Edmonton Oilers versus a team with an actual nickname. Maybe as soon as next year. But for now, it may just be the Mammoth based on the latest intel.
Also, some other rumors is that obviously we're just around the corner from the Olympics and the 2026 Olympic rosters for hockey will kind of be done like we just saw with the Four Nations, which I'm a little bit upset about. So apparently they will be partially announcing the Olympic rosters, 6 players from each team starting in June, and then we will get the full Olympic rosters in December.
You don't like that idea?
Well, for 2 reasons. First of all, you don't need to like garner interest for the Olympics. It's the Olympics. They don't announce 6 of the women. They don't announce, you know, Poulin, Stacey, Debian, Ambrose, and then be like, find out the rest later. They announce them all at once, and it's such an amazing moment to be like, this is our Olympic team. So why do we need to have 6 players that are announced? Like, people are going to be excited anyway. It's the Olympics. And then secondly, I thought announcing those 6 players for the Four Nations, there were some questionable decisions, right?
Yeah.
There were some people that we were like, was Brad Marchand really going to be a guy that was on the team? Maybe he ended up being fine, but what if you make a call and that guy has a terrible first couple months of the season. I mean, just saw that.
You're totally right about that. Brad Marchand, like, he played a decent role, but was he the lowest used forward? I think he was the lowest used forward in the final game, which means one of your top guys, one of the guys named to the roster, was clinging to the roster, if you want to say that. Like, I think that's somewhat fair. Anyway, it just opens you up for mistakes.
It does.
It opens you up to have someone there that doesn't belong there, which is not what the Olympics 100%. Should be. Like, I'm okay if you make a mistake with the Four Nations, but the Olympics is to be an Olympian. Mm-hmm. You earn it.
You need to
on the last day.
100%.
You don't get it given to you.
And for Canada, it might be McDavid and McCarr and McKinnon and Marner, and you probably won't make a mistake.
Yeah, that's
but
four.
Even think about if somebody gets hurt, and then you're like, oh, we did announce them, and now we have to pick a new player. It's just, why do we have to do this?
It's unbecoming of the Olympics.
That's what I am saying.
Quickly though, despite that, what are your six?
McKinnon, McCarr, Matthews, Marner.
Yeah.
I want to say Binnington. And I said,
do you go Taves? Because that's when you can make a mistake.
No.
McCarr gets hurt, God forbid.
I want to say Binnington.
I don't hate it.
Because he's going to be on the roster.
The only problem with bringing Binnington is like it's almost implied that he has to be the starter because of what he did.
Okay,
and then he's got like a full 82-game cycle of maybe not performing like a goalie you have full trust in despite his
performance. But I'm also thinking like aesthetically when they announce this, would they not want to have forwards, defense, and goaltenders? Like I'm thinking.
But of course, Team Canada didn't want to do that last time.
Well, and for the right reason. But if you're the announcement committee and there's how many Olympic teams? 10? Are they,
I think there's 12.
Okay, 12. Are they going to do a one line, like a 3-forward, 2D, 1-goalie?
That would be even more
That's
difficult.
Really risky.
I think Josh Morrissey might be the guy, though, if you're picking a sixth.
Okay, yeah, sure. But, like, at the same time, I'm like, you know, is Josh Morrissey going to be like, oh, I can't wait for the Olympics. Oh, my goodness. Canada's bringing Josh Morrissey. Like, I'm already fired up for the Olympics.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I guess what I would say is there going to be, like, there's always this thing with the IOC and the NHL. Like, how much are you going to let us use your footage? How much are you going to let us market these players? Well, this is a pure marketing move. So are you going to let the NHL market it? Are you going to let them show Olympic footage? Are you going to let them actually, you know, form a partnership that is mutually beneficial? Or do you just want six players for some announcement that's going to garner some interest that might be monetized in some small way? I don't really know.
See,
but if we're all playing ball, sure, pick six and actually advertise these six.
Okay. There might be some from...
That's what I was getting at.
The team that's coming up.
That wasn't just pandering.
Well, then do your segue. Now you're nervous.
It's not much of a segue, but we're bringing on Sean Reynolds of Sportsnet, who covers the Jets in Winnipeg. And there's a big game with the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Bigger, though, maybe for Vancouver. But all games seem to be pretty big for the Jets at the moment, because I think maybe the most interesting thing that's happening in the league right now is what's happening directly below the Winnipeg Jets with Colorado and Dallas, you know, forming not super teams, but really, really good teams that are battling it out likely in a first-round series. Is part of the conversation in Winnipeg always now what's happening just below them?
It definitely was with Dallas coming into town 2 games ago, especially because at that time Dallas was, they were 8 points back, but they had 2 games in hand. So you beat the Jets in that game, you win your 2 games in hand, now you're only 2 points back. And it was interesting because the Jets have just put themselves so far ahead all year. They've been in first place close to 70% of the entire year. And a good chunk of the time they weren't in first place, it was because, you know, other teams started the season earlier and jumped out to a little bit of a lead. It took the Jets some time to catch them, even though they started the season 15-1. So people were talking about it then, but I think just now the idea of those two super teams, and they sure do look like it, the Dallas Stars and the Colorado Avalanche, having to beat the heck out of each other in the first round is something that Winnipeg Jets fans are really looking forward to. And I think if you take a look around the playoffs, the playoff picture, if you're looking in the East, you're seeing Ottawa is kind of really come on. Looks like they've booked their ticket. They, you know, maybe they even jump out of the wild card spot and finish in that 2 or 3 spot in the Metro. The Montreal Canadiens, those two teams have been two of the best teams over the last 10 games. There's a feeling that in the East, you know, whoever gets those wild card teams is going to get a battle hardened team, whether it ends up being the Detroit Red Wings that slip in there or the Columbus Blue Jackets. Those teams have been duking it out. On the other side here, it feels like that eighth and final playoff spot, you know, maybe, you know, get a good look at a preview tonight of the Winnipeg Jets against the Vancouver Canucks. But it feels a little bit less like I think if there's, and I don't want to call it a free spot on a bingo card, but if you're looking for, you know, being a top seed and getting the easiest run against a lower seed, it's starting to look like that number 8 seed in the West is the one that you want. So things are lining up well for the Winnipeg Jets. And if they get through that series and they meet the winner of Dallas and Colorado, who have just absolutely gone toe-to-toe against each other, that lines up for them well as well.
Yeah, the tonight would be an opportunity to see a first-round matchup, as you mentioned, with the Canucks. What would an all-Canadian first round feel like? We don't get them much. And to get one with the best in the West, as you're saying, and a team that's a little bit, you know, not easier, but they've had a harder season. They might just be like coming in at the worst moment, maybe just crawling their way in. Is there a buzz around it just being a lot of Canadian action?
Yeah, it's so interesting because the Jets have faced the Montreal Canadiens. They got knocked out a couple of years back. The Edmonton Oilers, they swept in the first round a couple of years back. They lost to the Calgary Flames, but those were all impacted by COVID, and right. There wasn't a lot of fans in the building for those. So it's an interesting situation. The history between the Winnipeg Jets and the Vancouver Canucks wouldn't exactly be a solid one. There was a little bit of a history, you know, back in the Jets 1.0 days in the 80s. I can tell you this right now. People in Winnipeg despise the Edmonton Oilers because the old 80s Oilers kept the rest of the league from understanding just how good of a team the 80s Winnipeg Jets were. Like, this is a team that could have challenged for a cup, just like we always say that about the Calgary Flames. The one year that the Edmonton Oilers finally got knocked out, the Calgary Flames went and won. How many cups would they have had if they didn't have to go through the Oilers? It's the same thing with the Winnipeg Jets, and there were a lot of times that those Oilers broke the hearts of the Winnipeg Jets. So I don't know, to be honest, if it ended up being Calgary, if it ended up being Vancouver. I don't know how that would be viewed as you know, as far as a big rivalry between the two teams. But in Toronto, you guys will understand, you're always the big dog, right? And so the small dog loves to knock off the big dog. So if you're the city of Vancouver and the, you know, small, tiny metropolis of Winnipeg is going to take your lunch money, and boy, they sure look like they're capable of doing it this year. There's a lot of satisfaction that comes with that.
Yeah, of course. It doesn't have to be bad blood already, but the blood can get bad. Hopefully Vancouver can be competitive enough, as you mentioned, to make sure that it is, or it gets to that point where it can get a little nasty, but most first-round series do get to that point. Okay, so we just had Derek Lalonde on, and he was gushing a little bit about the Winnipeg Jets.
Third
and fourth line. I do want to ask you about the third and fourth line, but I want to ask you first about, you know, the situation at hand. Colorado obviously handed the Jets a pretty devastating loss last year, and fortunately, because they played so well, they will avoid either Dallas or Colorado likely in the first round, maybe get a layup, and then they're going to have a very, very difficult series in the second round. There's no way to get around that. The situation needs to be different in order for it to change, I'm assuming, because it was so devastating last year. So to this point, what is the best marker to suggest that the Winnipeg Jets are different, that Colorado can't come in and dominate as they did last time out? What about this Jets team should make fans believe that they are in fact different and that there's going to be a different result this spring?
Well, I'd like to say there's been some of those games that you take a look that build faith. So that last one against the Dallas Stars, right? Like, that's basically the Jets playing for first to set up that first round series between Dallas and Colorado. And the Jets came out and they pumped them in that game, right? And they played Dallas earlier in the year. They lost one to Dallas, but the first one they played against Dallas, it was the same deal. They handled them. And there was a game earlier on where they were playing back-to-backs against the Stanley Cup champs, the Florida Panthers, and they walked into Florida, and Florida kind of gave them a spanking, right? And the next game they were going to play three nights later back in Winnipeg, and the Jets, you know, they talked about it. They came out and they said, like, we need to respond. We need to treat this like we just lost game one or two of a series in the playoffs, and we need to have a bounce back. And they came out and they won that game. So there's a bunch of games like that. And it's the absence of other things. Like, last year, the Winnipeg Jets were in first for, you know, a chunk of time around Christmas and a little bit after Christmas around January. And then they went through this stretch that we talked about, and we were kind of raising the alarm bells at the time. The Winnipeg Jets were beating everyone below the playoff line and nobody above the playoff line. But they'd been so good to that point that they were still remaining close to the top of the league. And then in their last 16 games, with 16 games left, they lost 8 straight games. And then won 8 straight games. And what that told me about that team in retrospect, because I really believe the Winnipeg Jets were going to handle the Colorado Avalanche. They beat them every single game last season in the regular season. That clearly, I was way off on that one. But the markers that we saw there were a Winnipeg Jets team that sometimes could be there and be ferocious and then sometimes could just go entirely asleep. And that's what we saw from them in the first round of the playoffs. We haven't seen those stretches of this team kind of just turning off the way they had in the past. And that was really an issue. I mean, last year wasn't the first year that the Winnipeg Jets no-showed in the playoffs. And a perfect example of that, you go back to that year of the COVID year when they beat Edmonton four straight. And I think everyone thought the Jets were going to roll over the Montreal Canadiens, and the Canadiens destroyed them in that series. So we haven't seen the hot and cold Winnipeg Jets. They've been hot almost all year long, and it's basically because they stick to a very dedicated style of hockey that the third and fourth line, if you guys are looking for a segue, really kind of typifies and shows you what is the strength with this team.
Oh, I was going to go to Connor Hellebuck, but we got to learn about the third and fourth line. Like what? Okay, so we had talked to Derek Lalonde, and you know, he was saying that a lot of things that are overlooked in these championship teams or caliber teams are how good their third and fourth lines are. And here in Toronto, Justin and I were joking, we're like, we only talk about the top two lines because it's the core four.
Because you don't want to talk about the third or fourth
line. You don't want to. So what is the secret sauce that the Winnipeg Jets have found in depth scoring, depth impact with their third and fourth?
Well, it's first of all, sorry to hijack your show.
We'll come back to Connor Hellebuck. Don't worry.
We'll come back to this is a bit of a reverse engineering situation. The Winnipeg Jets are good because they established their identity in the kind of players that they have in the third and fourth line, and asked and kind of demanded over the Rick Bonus years, and took it further now in Scott Arneil's first year, that the likes of Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, Gabe Vilardi, Nikolai Ehlers, Cole Perfetti, their top six style of players, that their game looked like Adam Lowry's game and Justin Barron's game. And so what it was supposed to be was, yes, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor, they can do things that Adam Lowry's not going to be able to do. But they can all do the things that make Adam Lowry and Barron and those kind of players really good. And that's the effort. That's the commitment to details. That's the commitment to defense. And so what it's turned into is the Jets are just this suffocating juggernaut on defense, which they were last year. They continue to be this year. I think personally what happened was the Jets were a defensively deficient team before Rick Bowness got here. They spent the last 2 years kind of learning that style, falling off it, getting back on it, and then have now locked it in now. And what it's done is it's added an offensive element to this team. Because if you ever watch the Winnipeg Jets play, when they don't have the puck, it looks like a fire drill that they're trying to get it back. And when they get it back, it is instantaneously up ice going the other way. So a perfect example in their last game against Seattle, they block a shot at the point and they don't get the puck and secure it and wait for guys to start heading up ice. They're already heading up ice. So in that game, Barron gets the puck, throws it off the boards, and Kyle Connor is long gone. You're thinking before you see the replay that he must have just been cheating and cherry picking, but he's not. He's in his perfect defensive spot. And then the mindset is just get the puck back. But when we get it back, attack. They're trying to score as fast as they possibly can. And that style has really opened up the offensive guys like Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor. And it's why they're having the best offensive year that they've ever had before, and yet are the best defensive players they have ever been in their careers.
I'll let Ailish ask about Connor Hellebuck in a second, but first, in retrospect, like, how egregious was it that Mark Scheifele didn't play on the Four Nations? You mentioned like him having this amazing defensive year leading to an offensive explosion, or at least his best offensive year. I mean, I imagine everyone in Winnipeg was kind of shaking their heads watching those games.
Well, absolutely. And I'd said early in the year that he was going to make it. And I love, you know, we've got our podcast and we talk about it. And I said, like, book it. Mark Scheifele is going to Four Nations. And he didn't. And the line I love to use is, you know, in the end, it looks like I'm wrong, but actually Team Canada was wrong this one. I had it right. Team Canada had it wrong. That said, I understand it. Like, Mark Scheifele has spent time in his career in the past looking like a defensively deficient player, right? And your past matters in cases like this, because with guys like Sidney Crosby, with guys like Connor McDavid, Canada's got a large pool of players to go from, and a lot of them have earned the reputation that they have over years and years and years of doing the right thing over and over and over again. This is a little bit of, I mean, before Mark Scheifele, signed an extension with the Winnipeg Jets. There were a lot of fans in Winnipeg calling for him to be, you know, let go, to be sent out of town, right? Because a lot of people were frustrated watching the effort that he was putting out on the ice. Now, this new version of Mark Scheifele, I've seen enough to know that this is where he is now. This is who he is as a hockey player. He's grown. He's left that behind. He's turning 32 at the end of the year. It's a late evolution. And so because of that, I understand that Team Canada had a good idea of who they thought Mark Scheifele was. I'm just saying he's changed. And I'm very confident he's the hockey player that he is now. He's one of the reasons the Jets are so hard to play against defensively. And yet that trio, he, Vilardi, and Connor, I believe, remain the highest scoring trio in the NHL right now. So I think he earned it. It was a great conversation you two were having about, like, you know, you basically have to go right to the bell. You want to be an Olympian, you have to show, like, the day before you hop on the plane to go over there, that you deserve to be there. That conversation that you had, that works in Mark Scheifele's favor, because he's been working to show that he's that guy. I think he is that guy, and I think it will be recognized. I very much expect him to be on Team Canada's Olympic team next year.
Okay, I only have 60 seconds for my Connor Hellebuyck question. I don't even know how to begin. you know, career best year. Where does this rank maybe in all-time goaltender seasons? He's going to win his third Vezina trophy, and he's doing it without any competition. Like, are we seeing one of the best goaltending seasons of all time? You only have 60 seconds. Sorry.
I'll be really quick. Connor Hellebuyck used to be that goalie whose team was defensively deficient, and he bailed them out and made them look amazing. The tricky part with Connor Hellebuyck now is he doesn't face as many shots, definitely doesn't face as much high danger. And what he's gone from being that high volume goaltender, which some goaltenders are, and then they can't go to being low volume and yet being there when you're needed. He's been able to be both goaltenders. The tricky part with him about the season is it doesn't look as impressive as some of his other seasons. And probably if you're watching it, it's not, because his team is so good defensively in front of him. He doesn't have to be good. He doesn't have to be that Connor Hellebuyck that he used to be. So yes, the numbers say things, the amount of wins say things, and yes, you have to be a certain guy, kind of goaltender, to fit into that system. But the Winnipeg Jets as a team are a monster defensively. He is lucky to play behind them.
Oh,
should he win the Hart Trophy?
Okay, that's the tricky one. I'm gonna get myself in trouble.
You only have 20 seconds now.
Okay, 20 seconds. I went on Hockey Night in Canada when they were playing Colorado, and I said, hey, maybe a duel between he and Nathan MacKinnon. I just think it's hard to be the MVP on a team where you don't have to be that good for them to win. Like, the Jets are just so good defensively. And last year, he had the same numbers as Lauren Brossoit. They're such a good team. Any goaltender would succeed behind them. They don't need him to be an MVP to get the results they're getting. You probably need MacKinnon to be who he is, or Drysdale to be who he is, for those teams to be where they are.
Oh, well, the Winnipeg Jets should just play worse than Hellebuyck plays. Even his play is more impactful, and then he can win a Hart. We're on to something.
You got it all figured out. You got it all figured out.
Well, we didn't have enough time to get through everything, Sean, but we appreciate you jumping on. We'll have to get to this end of the Spurs hat story. I don't know where your Spurs fandom, why it's so prevalent, but it's big today.
Yeah. It's not that interesting a story. I'm a Spurs fan.
It's a nice 90s. Hat. That's I like it. It's a good hat. It's a good hat. Okay, we got
David
go.
Robinson. David Robinson. Best physique in sports history.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Well, check that out.
Look it up off the Rogers servers. Okay. Thanks, Sean. We appreciate your time. Have a great night. And Sean Reynolds of Sportsnet. Okay. We have a minute and 20 seconds. I got to do our best bets quickly. But
Just very quickly. That was a pretty stunningly honest answer about
Connor Hellebuyck.
Yeah,
no, we don't. We need an extra.
We'll unpack it
hour.
Again. We're good. Okay, let's get to bets
quickly. My bets are that I want more Canadian teams in the playoffs. So this is my more Canadian teams in the playoff parlay for you: Calgary to win and Montreal to win tonight, around plus 500. They're both dogs tonight, but they both need to win if we're going to try to get all seven teams in the playoffs. So. There you go.
Okay, I'm speaking out of both sides of my mouth, but I will continue to do so. I got a lot of Auburn. I want a lot of Florida, too. Walter Clayton Jr., SEC Tournament MVP. Okay. How about Final Four MVP? 8-1. If Florida wins, they're like 4-1. This guy's likely going to win the MVP.
So we like Auburn
and give me the better price. 8-1 Clayton Jr. All Final right. Four MVP.
Can we have an Auburn Florida final?
We can have a. They can meet in the Final Four.
Okay, that's good.
So then we just send one of our teams to the national championship game.
Okay, we got to run. Everybody have a great night. We will see you tomorrow.